Welcome back to The Wrong Opinion Presents, a movie podcast. This week we are talking about two movies. We're talking about Love Lies Bleeding and One Life. Super, 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 super different movies. Let's start off with Love Lies Bleeding, just because I saw that one first. Talked about this with, I think it was Driveaway Dolls. One of the three movies I was most looking forward to this year was Love Lies Bleeding. The trailer was absolutely incredible. I don't usually love trailers because they just give away too much. I love artistic trailers that are little movies of themselves and don't give away the plot of the movie at all. This movie, this trailer, you can watch the trailer and not really know what's going to happen because it kind of deceives you, but you know what you're in store for. You know you're in store for a visceral, queer, film noir-esque. So there are two characters. You have Kristen Stewart and Katie O'Brien. Kristen Stewart works at a gym, and her dad is a criminal underworld master in this small town. Okay, Katie O'Brien is a homeless nomadic sort of bodybuilder who is making her way to Las Vegas. Here she stops. I think she's from Oklahoma or Nebraska. Here she stops in New Mexico, where she meets Kristen Stewart. The two fall in love. Kristen Stewart has a sister who is being tormented by her husband, and they realize they have to do something about it, okay? Now, Kristen Stewart's dad, Ed Harris, is played by Ed Harris. His name is Lou Sr., and then her name is Lou. That's interesting, whatever. He is absolutely horrifying in this movie. This is the type of movie he was born for. He's always good at these creepy, kind of boss-level characters like Truman Show. And then this, they're cut from the same cloth. He's so much more visceral and creepy in this. And visceral is a really good way to explain this entire movie. When it comes to the sex in this movie, because it's not sexy, but it is. Like, you can tell that the characters are enjoying it versus a movie like Shame, where it's like, this is the most disgusting version of sex I've ever seen. But it's not something that's meant to turn you on in this movie. Its sole purpose is to be visceral. I'm gonna keep coming back to that word again and again and again. And the action in this movie is so visceral. It's not necessarily an action-packed movie, but when the action occurs, it's disgusting. One scene in particular, the first action scene we really see in the movie. I guess there's one small action scene where Katie O'Brien, her name is Jackie, the character she plays. She decks a guy who's trying to get a little flirty with her. But the first actual action scene, it's straight from the trailer. And I don't really want to spoil it, but it's kind of like a fantasy, honestly, of like this dark fantasy of bashing somebody's head in again and again and again. And what happens when you pull your hands away and see what we've come upon. But what started this entire tangent, this movie's been called film noir, like a modern film noir, neo-noir, a few times over. And in some sense it is. You have this sense of impending dread. You have these characters where you don't know if they're good or bad. And they're really just not the morally ambiguous characters. You have the femme fatale. And the biggest thing is you don't know really which of these characters is the femme fatale. Because Katie O'Brien doesn't really become a criminal until she meets Kristen Stewart. Kristen Stewart is born into a criminal underworld, but she is trying to get out of it, trying to get away from her dad and leave that past behind her. And both of their, this, you know, criminal little adventure of theirs kicks off when they meet each other. And either one you could blame the other for. You could say each is the other's femme fatale. On top of this, this movie had a really interesting descent into steroid-riddled madness. Katie O'Brien, obviously she's the bodybuilder. It's just very beautiful effects of showing this mental instability. I've never done steroids, you know. So after her first murder, Katie O'Brien starts descending into madness. And part of it is riddled with her steroids. And she has hallucinations when she gets to this bodybuilding competition. She has this incredible hallucination where she's vomiting out Kristen Stewart. And then it cuts to reality and she's just puking on stage. And she bursts into a roid rage. And then, of course, Ed Harris is there to save the day because he's the good guy in his own story. But a lot of those effects were just really well done. And she calls her mom at one point, and her mom calls her a monster. And I think the monsters in terms to her being a lesbian, whereas in reality, she's just become this murder machine. One of my favorite parts of this is in the trailer, you saw this Goodfellas scene where they're driving away. Katie O'Brien is sleeping. Kristen Stewart hears a corpse that's in the back of her truck moving around. And she pulls over and looks. The body's alive. It's like, oh, what are we going to do? Straight out of Goodfellas. So if you saw that, you know the scene is coming. You don't know when it's coming. And where they place it is, it was shocking to me, you know? And again, that goes back to if you're watching a trailer, I don't want to know what's going on. This movie did a really good job of telling me what's going to happen while still being able to shock me, which is just awesome. Just a lot of really cool... Just overall, this movie was fantastic. One of the best movies I've seen all year. Maybe my favorite movie of the year. There's just a lot of really cool small scenes in it, too. It had one of my favorite I love you scenes in any movie ever, where it's just kind of back-to-back with the fight and sex and then I love you. I don't want to get into it too much and spoil anything, but just one of my favorite I love you, first time saying I love you scenes in any movie ever. There's a scene where, so Kristen Stewart throughout the movie is trying to quit smoking. After she kills the guy, she sees cigarettes peeking out of his pocket and she's like, nope. As a guy who quit smoking 2.5 months ago, that was hilarious and poignant. At the end, there's a hallucination scene. I think it's going to be a little bit divisive. Again, don't want to spoil anything. She basically turns into She-Hulk. And whether it's Katie O'Brien's hallucination or Kristen Stewart, what she sees of this giant girlfriend she has is, I guess, up for debate, up for your own interpretations. That being said, tangent, I think Katie O'Brien should have been the She-Hulk to Tatiana's Jennifer Walters. She could have been the Lou Ferrigno. It's a great idea for Marvel going forward because the CGI in that movie was really bad. Whatever. There was also a scene where Kristen Stewart's being interviewed by the FBI. There's a dead body sitting behind her couch. She can see it, and the cat starts like pawing at it. We've seen those versions of tense, you know, I know where the dead body is and you don't, and we're trying to avoid it. You know, not a new trope. A couple favorite quotes. There's the line where Katie O'Brien, she's tripping out on steroids, talking to her, I guess it's your younger brother. It's the same scene in which she calls her mom, and then the mom picks up the phone and calls her monster. She tells younger sibling, don't ever fall in love. It hurts. Ugh, what a bummer. I think my favorite, 100% favorite quote from this movie, Kristen Stewart says, I don't even know what happened to X character. Don't want to spoil anything. This character, Daisy, responds, he got smashed in the head and set on fire, apparently. Just so cavalier. That was the perfect line delivery. She might have been the star of this. Nah, she was not the star of this movie. She might have stolen this movie. Kristen Stewart, I think, this is the kind of role she was made for. She did a movie called Speak in 2004, which I think was her type of movie. And then with Twilight, you know, she got rich, got famous. And I guess it's kind of this, you know, emo icon role, but that's just not her type of thing. This is what Kristen Stewart is made for, is Love Lies Bleeding. Queer cinema, film noir, visceral. She doesn't look good. She looks ragged and dirty and tired and sad and angered constantly. And the movie ends very kind of ambiguously, kind of, it's the end of The Graduate, but imagine if Dustin Hoffman and what's her name killed Mrs. Robinson and then drove off together. That's kind of the vibe I got from this movie. Worst reviews. Screen Daily said it makes no apologies for its stylistic boldness or its rising body count. Absolutely true. It makes no apologies for just the depths of its viscerality. But it says its swagger cannot hide a nagging hollowness underneath. This movie is anything but hollow. I think it's not, I don't think we necessarily relate to any of the characters, nor are we supposed to. But in Double Indemnity or Chinatown or any of these, you know, classic film noir, we don't relate to the characters. That's not the point. We're supposed to be repulsed by what we're watching. And I think if you're not familiar with film noir, then you would call it hollow. So that's not me saying, oh, I'm smarter than you. It's just like, I think you need to be a little more grading the type of film you're watching, you know? I would recommend this movie to anybody who's okay with obscene violence and sex. So once again, not recommending this to my mother. This was a 10 out of 10 movie. My favorite, I think my favorite movie of the year. Of the three movies that I was most looking forward to, this, Lisa Frankenstein, and Drive Away Dolls, this is my favorite of the three. I think if I'm ranking movies, this is probably number one. I think I would go to Dune number two. I don't know, I liked Argyle. Whatever. We'll rank movies at the end of the year. Next up, though, a movie I was a little looking forward to as soon as I saw a trailer, but it absolutely blew me away. This movie is One Life. This tells the true story of a character, of a man named Nicky Winton, a British man who had, he previously had a German name. His mother changed their name when they were young, Jewish grandparents, but he's agnostic and sort of considers himself a European more than anything else. It's the late 1930s, and he finds a calling to help the people of Prague. Specifically, Jewish children who just German invasion is imminent. Okay. They don't necessarily go into depth in how he does so. And I think that's a good call. He gets them passports and visas, and he sets them up with refugee foster homes, right? In Britain. And they don't necessarily go into depth in how that happens. And I think that's a good call because I think you just get lost in the weeds, you know? So it's very surface level on how, on just the logistics of everything. And it focuses more on the individuals who were taking part in it. So the movie starts with him as an old man, Anthony Hopkins, 1980s, I would say. And starts cutting back and forth between then and the 1930s. Now, it goes back and forth several times, but the bulk of the first third is in the past. And the second half is mostly Anthony Hopkins coming to terms with the fact that he couldn't have saved everybody. This movie in general had incredible pacing. I think people call movies with good pacing boring sometimes, and that's because they're not willing to wait until they get to the fast part. And one scene in this film, Anthony Hopkins is having a slow conversation with an old friend talking about the past. And it's happy, it's joyful, and then just something triggers a memory. He goes silent. Looks to his food, and then boom, we're in the past. Hitler is invading Prague. It's too late for most of these kids. The best part of, especially the final third-ish, is what we end up seeing happen to the rest of these kids. Gets slowly revealed as he's trying to figure out a way to tell the story. He's trying to, he doesn't want the, his, he has a scrapbook filled with memories of the Prague of getting the kids out. And he doesn't want the story to be in a library because, you know, who's going to get a book? He wants it to be told. He wants it in a museum or eventually goes on TV, but he doesn't want the story to be about him, okay? But as he's telling the story to a French woman who ends up being the spark that gets the story told to a wider audience, she looks at a picture of eight kids and he says, and she's like, wow, I can't believe you got these eight kids out. That's incredible. And he flips the pages and like, yeah, there are a couple more. And then she asks how many there were. And I don't want to spoil it. It's a true story. And I don't think the number's going to spoil it. But I think it kind of would take away from just the few. It doesn't matter. He tells her the real number. And she's just stunned. And we're stunned with him. With her. But then she keeps flipping and there's blank pages. And we know what the blank pages mean. The final train didn't get out of Prague. It's just devastating. And he's a little bit in denial of what happened to these kids, and he wants to have a good imagination that they didn't go to these concentration camps, when of course they did. Now, across this movie, like, I've cried in movies. I cry in movies all the time. I don't really cry in real life. I think when I'm crying in movies, I, like, dissociate myself, and I'm able to, I don't know, just emote in a different way. I rarely cry after a movie. I cried in this movie in my car on the way out. Just devastating, because it's such a, he doesn't care about the, he's happy with the kids he saved. Like, I don't want to say he doesn't care. He's happy with the kids he saved. But there were millions of people who died that he just wishes he could have saved. And he can't really get over that. And then in the end, he finally comes to terms with the good he did. And I saw I think it was Bryan Cranston talking about laughing and crying in movies and shows. Unless you're doing a skit where everybody's in on the joke, you don't want your characters to laugh. You want them to almost laugh. And then at the very end of a joke, they can burst out into laughter. There's a scene in Everybody Loves Raymond that did this really well where Robert and Ray are making fun of their mom, and they're both kind of like holding in laughter, and then they finally get to one final joke and they burst out laughing, and that's great. But if the character's laugh the whole time, it's just not as poignant. Same thing with crying. If a character is crying the entire movie or breaking down in tears, it doesn't feel anything. But if a character almost cries, we feel that. And then when they finally break down, it shatters us. The final, towards the end, when he finally breaks down and cries, it just exemplifies that to a T. This movie was very well directed. I don't think it was the largest budget in the world. I have never heard of this director. I'm assuming he's a British guy. This was a very British movie. The character's British. The where he was disseminated was from BBC. James Hawes directed this. He did a couple episodes of Black Mirror, I guess. Did the Snowpiercer show. A couple episodes of Doctor Who. So yeah, just very British guy. Point is, very well directed movie. And at the very end, I thought it was just a little long. Not like long. I think that's a lazy way to say things. I just think there was an extra scene. But then it landed the ending in a really good way. I just thought, as I was watching it, I thought it should have ended at a certain point, and then I was proven wrong. It was almost like an epilogue. And there was a line just leading into great lines. This line would mean nothing to you, but when you watch it, you'll see why it's one of my favorite. He looks at a girl who he had saved. He sees her as an adult and says, "I like to swim." Means nothing to you now. You'll get it when you watch it. Watch the movie. A couple great lines. This one. So there are two that are just have nothing to do with the movie, really. They're just nice lines that you should remember. Telling people isn't bragging. Good thing for all of us to remember. After Hitler started invading, somebody said, "What happens now?" Nikki says, "We work harder," instead of wringing our hands in the air. Great thing to remember, just for life. Best lines, though, "Save one life, save the world." That's obviously the crux of this movie, the name of the movie. That line was said in, not verbatim, in Schindler's List, taken, I believe, from the Quran. My favorite line, though, I think the first time I cried in this movie, and then it just didn't stop. Like, my collar was soaked when I left because I was just tears streaming down the entire movie. A character says to Nikki, "You have a lot of faith in ordinary people." Nikki kind of obviously says, "I do. I'm an ordinary person." Fantastic. By the way, the guy who played young Nikki, Johnny Flynn, not the guy from the Timberwolves that got drafted instead of Steph Curry, he looked spot on young Anthony Hopkins. It was perfect. Could not have asked for better casting. Kind of the barrel-chested, happy dog face. Just really good casting. I wonder if they're related. Let's see. They're not related. He's 40 years old. Okay. He looked just like the guy, by the way, from Raiders, the evil Nazi. The creepy... Obviously, there's a lot of evil Nazis. Most of them are evil. They're just the creepy guy from Raiders, which is funny because people kept thinking he was German. It's like, yeah, you look really German, buddy. One just dumb review said that this movie is too conservative in its depiction of the horrors of World War II. This movie isn't about the horrors. This is a celebratory movie that's supposed to really make you... I think this movie is meant to make you want to do something great, whether it's donating time, money, your life to help save others. And, I don't know, just showing gas chambers? I don't know, I don't know how that makes the movie better. This is a PG movie about Nazis. You're just not going to show too much, you know? So calling this movie too conservative is very, very odd. But that being said, because it's PG, anybody and everybody should watch this movie. I don't know that everybody would enjoy... I think everybody would enjoy this movie. I think people who have just, like, a baseline of liking movies, I think this movie would break anybody's heart. So I think they would love it. I think people who love good movies, they would... I think this is, you know, Cor Jefferson, low budget, great actors, important story, everything you want. If you're interested in Nazi history, not Nazi history, but Jewish history specifically... this movie's for you. This just... Everybody should watch the movie. That's the point of my story. That being said, if you hate my wrong opinions, tweet me at WO Presents. We are going to be back next week. We've got... Let's see. We've got Quantumania coming out this Wednesday. Did that with Ricky. Going to be doing Guardians 3 soon with BJ Clark. In the next week, we'll probably be talking about maybe Ghostbusters, maybe Godzilla. So stay tuned and check it out. Until then... Peace out.